on here?
Earth's resistance is futile.
This,
indeed you are, Paul,
is...
Still I am, Paul!
Fan Effect.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Fan Effect, sponsored by Megaplex Theaters, Utah's premier movie entertainment company. Hey, before we begin, you want to save on your FanX 2022 tickets? Use the discount code KSLFans at FanX.com for a 15% discount. FanX is going to be super fun this coming September at the Salt Palace Convention Center. All right, here we go. This is the one we've been excited for. We've teased. We're ready. Here we go. I'm going to play a little bit of music to set the mood, but this will be the incomparable sounds of the incomparable John Williams. A brand new track composed specifically for the Star Wars series Obi-Wan on Disney Plus. We are halfway through this limited series. 3 of 6 episodes have aired. I think they're incredibly cruel to have to make us wait a calendar week between each one, between episodes 1 and 2 coming out on the same day, and then only 5 days later, after a holiday weekend when we were distracted by other things, we got another episode, and then they just left us in the worst, most cliffhanging spot possible. Well, joining me in my misery is one of our favorite co-hosts and guests, Dan Spindle from KSL TV. And, you know, alongside me, the resident Star Wars geeks of the station.
Fan obsessed.
Between radio and TV, we are the kings of Star Wars for KSL, the company. But
at least the court jesters of Star Wars.
Dan is obviously a far better Star Wars artist. If you saw the picture that we tweeted out of his amazing whiteboard work, a very unforgiving medium we've talked about. But for the whole month of May, which was Star Wars celebration month, essentially, we had a great thing. Now we had to move on to June. It's Utah. It's nice. It's a nice logo, Dan, but it's not Star Wars.
Listen, we had such a great month to tee up everything for this, and the reveal of Obi-Wan Kenobi. Wasn't it worth it?
Oh, absolutely.
Wasn't it worth the wait?
It's already the most watched series ever on Disney Plus.
Yeah, biggest
launch
ever.
No surprise.
You're right.
In fact, let's talk about that as we kind of get going here, Dan.
Because if we have to, let's do it.
I know, right? It's so hard.
People should know, we have not discussed this yet. Andy and I talk all the time. We have been holding this back for, a week and a half, I guess.
We saved the good stuff so that we can have the same experience together and we can get thoughts unfiltered and they don't sound repeated. None of that. But man, it was hard to wait this long to talk about it, especially after last Wednesday's episode with all the big reveals. But talking about this, does it surprise you at all that this is the number one watched show on Disney Plus, that it beats The Mandalorian, which was
not
the
all.
Number one? That, why not?
Because of the history, right? I mean, this is Ewan McGregor. This is big time return to form. I mean, The Mandalorian was an unknown, right? It was exciting and interesting looking and, hey, this Western and whatever. But I think a lot of people who are outsiders might look at it and go, am I going to enjoy this? Do I really want to watch a Star Wars TV show? This one was a lot of hype based on a lot of kind of prestige going back to the George Lucas prequels and these callbacks and what revelations will we see from this legacy character that has as much, I should say, screen time of the mind. We've been thinking about Obi-Wan Kenobi longer than anybody else.
Right.
I mean, you probably hear Obi-Wan Kenobi's name and, you know, his name in the hologram from Leia in the original almost more than anything else. And it rings Obi-Wan Kenobi, that name.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Right.
You're my only hope.
You see Darth Vader first. You hear Luke when Uncle Owen calls him. But, I mean, Obi-Wan Kenobi... Come on, just saying it. That name, it roots us and grounds us in the original Star Wars trilogy. So the idea that we're continuing on here to tell this story that predates that, of course, is just exciting, I think, to anybody, fans and casual fans alike.
Well, one thing it does too, Dan, is it combines, it has a way to bring together fans of the original trilogy and the prequel trilogy. Remember, there's a lot of fans of the original trilogy that struggled with much of how the prequel trilogy.
I think time is helping to sort of
soothe that. But there was a lot of negative feelings about different parts of the prequel trilogy. But time has helped. But the kids that was made for are now adults.
Right.
And Ewan McGregor's even made comments about that. Like, he's like, now that the kids, and he always throws in almost as a snide aside, who we made the prequel trilogies for.
Right.
They're now grown up and they're excited to revisit and bring this all back together.
And I think
so that helps. You've got now two generations.
Right.
Plus, you've got we've got our kids who are now who were too young for the prequels, really. I mean, they've watched them, but they weren't around when they came out. They watched the sequel trilogy, and they probably have better feelings about the sequel trilogy than many of us of the previous two Star Wars generations feel about it, which is great. I actually am happy about that. I will never tell a kid that liked Rise of Skywalker or Force Awakens if they say that's their favorite. I'm going to be like,
well, you can't possibly be a Star Wars fan then.
Well, I look at the sequel trilogy with these TV shows as way in the distant future because the reason it calls back to the original
My Star
and the prequels,
Wars took place around 3ABBY.
I think what you said about the prequels and my kids being too young, my oldest son was born the year that Revenge of the Sith came out. And so, yes, they didn't see him in the theater. But then growing up, you had the Clone Wars and Rebels. So the animation, if you want to talk about combining eras, you have the original trilogy, you have the prequels, and you basically have everything in animation, which is this generation's
expanded
universe.
There's a lot of it,
universe.
Too, though. I mean,
there's so
between
much
Clone
to touch
Wars,
on.
Rebels,
right.
and everything like
my
that.
My kids, more than anything, I would say that my Star Wars fandom was rekindled with animation, with my kids, because we didn't watch much of the Clone Wars, but then when Rebels came out, we really got into Rebels together.
Yes.
And then when Clone Wars hit Netflix, we went back and hit all the Clone Wars, and I thought, what did I miss? I cannot believe I missed the Clone Wars when it originally came out. And I'm so glad that thanks to streaming, boy, my son, my oldest, who's 17 now, he is obsessed with animation and
But this is your son that's created some really cool cosplays too,
oh,
right?
Oh, absolutely. He does cosplay and he collects more than I do. And he collects the Black Series 6-inch, I mean, crazy amounts of stuff. I have to try to control him a little bit because he's probably got, I don't know, 24 figures that are very nice. I say higher end, they're $25 when you buy them, which is
that's a lot for one teenager.
Yeah. Anyway, the point being is that this show, Obi-Wan Kenobi, really brings together parents, children, and we're going to talk about that, about children watching some of the content of this show. But boy, isn't it the anticipation. So we haven't even started into the content yet. The anticipation of this show was absolutely worthwhile, and it warranted this type of buildup, because not only did we wait for this since the end of Revenge of the Sith, we waited for a lot of these stories for 45 years.
Since you say that. We did. I mean, we've been waiting since 2005, but I wouldn't say we were waiting for it to happen, because all indications around circa 2005, 2006 were that was never going to happen.
Right.
And so we may get some books someday that might talk about this or might not. Maybe with the Clone Wars animated series, it could lead. And then, you know, I think Rebels came out right after Disney bought it. It was already
Rebels
almost
was a
on
Disney
deck.
Property.
Like, it was already mostly produced.
It was Disney, yeah, for sure.
Because it takes a couple of years from the first script writing to the final product for the animated series.
They have one little episode with Obi-Wan Kenobi with Maul, and he faces
off
with Maul in the desert. It's
Sam Witwer did the voice of both Maul and Obi-Wan.
No, Stephen Stanton did Obi-Wan
Stephen
Kenobi.
Stanton did Obi-Wan.
Yes,
okay.
And Sam Witwer, my kids do that one all the time where they go, Kenobi! And he screams Kenobi in the middle of the Tatooine desert.
You're in the wrong place.
Yeah, excellent, excellent little taste of Obi-Wan Kenobi. But it just it kind of got the appetite going for what is this show.
So we waited. They were very, very secretive, and it became evident very quickly why they were so secretive about it. We'll get to that in a sec. But here is a clip from Obi-Wan.
You still want Kenobi? He's gone.
Maybe you've been looking in the wrong place. I want every lowlife and bounty hunter to squeeze him.
They're coming. Stay hidden, or we will not survive.
Leave us alone.
When the time comes, he must be trained.
Like you trained his father?
Ouch.
Already you've got a burn. There's a meme
Every
going
time
about
my kids
burn.
Hear that when they say, oh, sick burn.
And then have you seen the meme for that?
Yeah.
He who could burn couldn't save himself from being burned.
That's right.
Star Wars fans were one of a kind. So I got the goosebumps just listening to those clips again.
Yeah.
And it is. It's a combination of things. One of the great things about Star Wars is that it brings out nostalgia even as it's giving you new things. It's hard to believe in some ways that it's been 22, 23 years since Phantom Menace. Like over 2 decades.
Right.
And we'd only barely waited over 2 decades.
That's a generation.
From the original Star Wars
yeah.
to Phantom Menace. We've actually now waited the same time, almost exactly, from Phantom Menace to today.
Yeah.
That we waited from the debut of A New Hope in 1977 to the debut of Phantom Menace in 1999.
And from the end of Return of the Jedi, it was only 16 years till the Phantom Menace,
right.
So which felt
like
an eternity.
Forever, exactly.
And you had the re-releases and the special edition and all that. But there were the dark times in the late 80s, early 90s. We are in such a renaissance of Star Wars right now that anytime I hear any whining or complaining, especially about this show, I just want... Do you remember The Notebook? And it's like a meme and a gif where he says, what do you want? No, what do you want? And she says, I don't know. It's not that simple. And he goes, no, what do you want? And he yells it in her face. That's what I feel like with Star Wars fans who don't just eat this stuff up. It is so great.
I don't know what I want, but I know it's not this.
Right. That's the... Don't you love... We're getting into the reaction before the meat and potatoes. But... if you don't just watch this and, like you said, get those nostalgic feels, right?
Yeah.
You had complaints, oh, too much green screen in the past. Okay, fine. You've got new technology that allows you to be immersed in these environments.
Did you read the article? There was an article in Vanity Fair, really long piece.
Yeah,
thankfully,
yeah, yeah.
They let everybody have free access to one article
in
the month, and that was the
one
I spent it on. But talking about the set that they built, it's like a 360... It's like almost a dome. I got the impression it was kind of like a dome where they can turn the background into any environment, 3D depth. I've been to a couple of plays on stage where I think a similar type technology is used, where by the use of a hanging kind of almost a sheen curtain and then projection, you can make a stage look like it's got buildings on there that would normally require painting and rolling down and everything. Like, so just being able to do that live real time in front of a real audience, being able to go a next step and do it for video, it makes perfect sense. And thank heavens, right?
Well, this whole volume technology that they have now that they used for The Mandalorian and Book of Boba Fett, now they've taken it to the next
floors,
level.
Essentially.
Right. Well, and certain
and that's why they're on sand planets. They can just dump sand on the floor.
Well, they got the sand. That's the funny thing that my kids said about this latest world. They said, oh, that looks... See, here's the cynicism that comes from my children of this generation that know about these technologies. And they say, it looks like that was shot in California. And I go... Okay,
yeah,
it does.
Well, welcome to everything ever filmed in the 1960s.
Listen, though, when you watch this, let's kind of get into it. The first thing that I loved was the pace that allows you to reconnect, right? Let's start. The very first thing you see is the recreation of the slaughter at the Jedi Temple.
Yes.
Right?
Well, we watched the montage first, right?
Oh, what a great montage it was.
Yes.
Because I thought, do we need to watch the prequels to catch up?
No,
and I hadn't
quite
done it. Then they give you 4 minutes of perfect recreation, a retelling of, hey, you want to know who Anakin and Obi-Wan are and how they connected and who they were? It would only have been better if they would have thrown in some of the Clone Wars interactions with the animation, but that would have distracted. I just thought, I was getting emotional watching it going, wait a second. These are brothers. When in Revenge of the Sith, when Obi-Wan says to him, when he says, I hate you, that's what Anakin says. And he goes, you were my brother, Anakin. I loved you. You were supposed to destroy. I mean, when he says, angst-ridden, you were supposed to destroy the Sith, not join them. It almost makes me cry, honestly. I feel this
emotion.
Yeah, but
the emotion. Music is also helping you. That's the amazing score
doubt.
At that moment.
Oh, so that connection that these two had, and Obi-Wan leaves him a heaping, steaming, burning mess, believing that he's dead, and we know now that he officially believed he was dead.
He couldn't bring himself to strike the killing blow.
Right.
But he also believed, and really, if the Emperor hadn't shown up, he would have died.
He would have died. Yeah.
It was...
because the Emperor says he's still alive.
Yeah, but he was just laying there burned and groaning, and
what
the droids didn't
though.
Seem to be in a hurry to help him,
no.
The droids from that planet.
What a tee up to the show, though, letting you, reminding you, anyone who has forgotten and who's not like me or us or anybody who watches Star Wars consistently, is, oh yeah, that's Anakin. That's Obi-Wan. They met when Anakin was a child, and Obi-Wan was like his older brother, and then he was his mentor, and then Obi-Wan's greatest failure in life was that Anakin had joined the dark side right before he died, quote-unquote, died on Mustafar. I mean, what? Pure evil. Striking down children in the Jedi Temple. It's the most dark setup to a villain.
Actually,
that is Darth Vader.
It was rough timing for that show to come out to the point that Disney put a disclaimer
that hit hard,
just to give people a heads up that
so that's
kids
are
going to get shot at school at the first you know, after teachers, the 4 minute montage.
Right. We never got to see either the teachers defending the children in the original in Revenge of the Sith, because you see Anakin and the 501st walk up the steps and he goes into that room. That also gets me emotionally every time I see it, where he says, "Master Skywalker, what shall we do?" And he ignites the blade and the little kid flinches. God, I get chills even right now saying it. This took it to the next level and showed these teachers, these brave Jedi teachers, instructors, defending these children, trying to get them away. And you don't realize, Andy, when you watch that first scene, oh, they're showing us again. Wait a second. Are they showing us someone of importance?
Makes you wonder.
I've decided that they are as we move into Kenobi now. As we knew we were going to get to Tatooine and we see Obi-Wan Kenobi, what were your first thoughts when you saw this butcher meat packing plant worker?
Well, I was wondering if that was a crate dragon that they were cutting up the meat of.
Kind of like a giant,
and it's like a moving slaughterhouse. Like, oh, gotta set up there now.
Well, and they
told used the bones of the crate dragon for shade.
Which is like how Book of Boba Fett kind of set us up to the former oceans of Tatooine when they said this used to be water, filled with water. And so then you've got kind of this manta ray looking sideways creature.
I assumed it was a crate dragon. I wasn't sure.
I thought it was like an old sea creature. And I'm like, how is the, I guess the meat is preserved in the arid climate of... You know how sometimes
mummies get to be preserved. We saw a crate dragon get killed and we saw the Jawa scavenging it for food.
Go watch it again. I'm going to say it's a sideways manta ray. You look at this thing, it looks like an old sea creature thing.
Well, it was one of the space whales from Rebels.
There you go.
Well, that crashed on Tatooine.
Sure.
Well, but so we get started, and what I took from the first portion is Obi-Wan is living the mundane, everything is the same every day.
Right.
Incredibly boring. He cuts himself a little shard. He does his work all the day.
Didn't cut it for himself,
doesn't
though.
Say
he
anything.
Didn't realize he was cutting it for his yopi, for his animal.
Right. And the question was he stealing it? I don't know.
What if
that
I liked
was his
about it.
One quarter portion, Obi-Wan.
Well, he has to take the extra portion for his kid. Well, what I liked about it, though, it was telling us with no dialogue for the first several minutes what kind of a person Obi-Wan Kenobi was. And I like that storytelling because sometimes...
He couldn't bury all the goodness in him, even though he was... But then, okay...
Well,
that's the kind of person he is. But then shortly after that, when the Inquisitors come to the planet, they're flushing out Jedi. They flush out the young Jedi kid. Yeah. And he goes to Obi-Wan for help.
Yeah.
And Obi-Wan's like, well, stay hidden. And then the next day, dude's hanging in the square.
Well, before that, you understand that Obi-Wan won't even help a guy in front of him in the line. They said, wait a second. This is half my normal pay. And the guy shoves him. And he looks at Obi-Wan. You going to say something? Obi-Wan doesn't say a word. So we're getting the idea that nothing is worth interfering. Nothing is worth sticking up for anyone and bringing attention to yourself. Even the life of a former fellow Jedi. And it breaks your heart, but...
Yeah, it's a tough choice to make.
You understand, though, when he goes outside the Lars homestead and he's watching a young Luke Skywalker.
We understand, having watched all of the movies since. Now, and that's interesting, too, because always, you know... Many of the truths we cling to depend greatly on our own point of view as Obi-Wan.
A certain point of view.
But that is true. Like, if you watched, George Lucas even himself said, if you watch the movies in the order they came out, you know, that's the experience that we've all had. But he says, if you watch them from 1 through 6, he goes, now the only person who doesn't know Darth Vader's Luke's father is Luke. And you're waiting for him to finally get that information, which is an interesting, you know, a different viewpoint. So we know why Obi-Wan has to let this Jedi go.
Yeah.
He can't do more because the mission of keeping and preserving Luke as the hope to one day dethrone Vader, it ain't the kid, unfortunately. It ain't the Jedi that came up to help him is not going to be the one that's going to save Vader.
It.
But we also know that. So I felt kind of, with some people were like, wow, Obi-Wan's really in a dark place. And I'm like... No, Obi-Wan's doing what he has to do.
It's true.
And I thought,
I looked at
what does that mean about my heart? What personality test did I just fail by agreeing with Obi-Wan?
I think it says more about the impossible position that Obi-Wan Kenobi has been put in, and that's why he is so defeated when he tells the other Jedi, listen, we lost. It's over. Go into hiding. And we find out later he's literally buried the lightsabers together, Anakin's and his lightsaber, the sign and symbol of the Jedi. And he uses a blaster throughout this thing, and he uses
hand-to-hand
combat throughout this thing. He's a warrior. However, and this is kind of jumping the gun, we see later on, once he does reignite the saber, he's rusty. But it makes sense to me. It makes sense. I was looking at some criticism online with, why isn't Obi-Wan this or that? Because 10 years, people, 10 years he's been on Tatooine, has not left the planet in 10 years is what we come to believe.
Right.
Has not left Luke's side. He is crazy Uncle Ben. I mean, I say Uncle Ben. He's not an uncle, but he's Uncle Owen.
Or rice maker.
He doesn't make rice either. But he's not unknown to Luke Skywalker. I know he kind of sets the ship there, which is fantastic, which is the one that Luke is playing with in A New Hope, you know, zooming around.
Yes. When except for he gives it back. Don't give him this stuff.
We know he'll get it at some point. But let me throw this out
there.
That,
by the way, is the Skyhopper. That's the ship he flies that we never get to see. That's the one whose fin is all busted up. It's a model of the Incom Skyhopper.
Got it. See, that's why I rely on your deep knowledge here. I love the fact that this series is giving characters, I think, an incredibly deep storyline. Uncle Owen in the first one was, Luke, here I am trying to prevent you from going to the academy, keeping you from the harvest. Yeah, you have too much of your father, blah, blah, blah. And then he's dead. Then we see a quick Uncle Owen who is, he's there with his father, Cleed Lars and Shmi. He knows of Anakin's mother, but he doesn't know Anakin much. Anyway, you don't get a whole lot. This shows that Uncle Owen cares about him a lot. And really does. He says to Obi-Wan, you don't care about him. You care that he's showing. New term. I don't think we've ever had that term in Star Wars. Showing. What is it? Force-sensitive abilities. You want to know if he's showing. So Owen is tough, too. Owen stands there face-to-face with the Inquisitors.
Yeah. And you're wondering, is he going to... I mean...
He could have given up Obi-Wan.
Some of the tension is gone because it doesn't matter if he gives up Obi-Wan.
Sure.
He's not going to die.
Well, you know, Obi-Wan's not going to die either, right?
Right. And so... But...
Man, I was tense.
You can still put yourself in the moment of like... That's a pretty tough choice if you're Owen.
I think it just gives Owen a lot of credit, which he never really had before. He didn't think about it. I didn't know we were going to get this. Fantastic. Okay, then how about the next? Well, let's talk about the Inquisitors first. What did you think of them? Because you've seen Rebels and you've seen the Inquisitors. Is that
I don't care that his head is too fat for the Inquisitor. I didn't realize till I watched this show that he's from Utapau.
Yes, which...
It took me a bit with the lines and when we finally saw up close, he had the razor teeth.
Well, because he didn't quite look like those that we saw in...
Well, I didn't realize that the Grand Inquisitor was an Utapau from the Rebels series either.
Yeah.
I finally put it all together.
Yeah.
And then it was apparent in this. I think the Inquisitors are cool. Since I was familiar with them, it wasn't weird. I still kind of wonder, like... We're wiping out the Jedi. Why are we force training? And if it's a rule of two, like, what does the Emperor think of Inquisitors? How much does the Emperor know about the Inquisitors? They report directly to Vader. They don't go around him to go higher up the ladder, which I thought maybe...
With some of the comic book iterations.
Well, I just figured that they would. Like, that's the thing of the Sith users. Like, Vader's pretty powerful, but I want to get to the real power.
You say they report directly to Vader, and yet when that... which brother is that with the hat?
The fifth brother.
Okay, so fifth brother says to Reva in part two, or part three, either one, he says, you spoke directly to Vader. Or he says, you spoke directly to Vader. Like, as if that is not a normal thing to communicate directly with Darth Vader.
They usually probably get orders from him, but they don't talk to him.
So what I liked about, before we get to Darth Vader, I will say after watching it three times, I've watched all three episodes three times, I like Reva more now. At first, it's not as if she completely threw me out of it, but I was wondering about her. Who is this, and why is she allowed to say these things? And because the Grand Inquisitor in Rebels is absolutely terrifying, vicious... it's just very interesting.
Well, he was pretty rough on the people in this one, too, and he chops up the one guy.
Well, I was waiting to get up to that point, but I do like Reva a lot now, and I'll tell you why when we get to the other parts. But now, how about the huge reveal on Alderaan?
And that was okay. So I asked you before we started the series. I wanted to. You didn't want me to say anything, not even like one word to you.
Right. No, I wouldn't look at you. Yeah.
And I wanted to just say one word to you and just say, hey, there's one word I want to give to you. And I want to see how you, as you watch it.
Sure.
What is your thought is what do I mean when I said finally?
Yeah.
So I wanted to tell you that before and say, I said, finally.
It's got, well, now that I know that we're talking about Leia, it's got to be finally we get to see Leia, right? Grow up and
kind of. It was more that we finally get to see Alderaan.
Oh, man. Now
we've seen it for one second in Revenge of the Sith.
I got chills just now. And look, guys out in the audience, you know, I am a Star Wars obsessed geek, fanatic, crazy person, okay? When I saw this, I think we might have paused it, or else I just out loud said to my kids, oh, look, it's Alderaan. Oh, my gosh, look how gorgeous, you know?
Yeah.
And it's bittersweet. I'm looking going, That's what they destroyed in the blink of an
eye.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm almost in a weird way disappointed that it's taken us this long, because up until this point, Alderaan is Leia's planet, with air quotes.
Right.
But what do we know about it? It's
nothing.
Bluish looking.
Well, do you know what Alderaan looks like
to me? It's peaceful. They have no weapons, but we don't know. We don't know what it looks like. We get to see it for a split second in Revenge of the Sith. And now, and for me, I was really surprised to see Leia.
Yes.
I really was.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about it, it makes sense, but I wouldn't have figured that anything would involve Leia.
Right.
So getting to see Alderaan, getting to see the Organa family, getting to see some of the politics involved, all this stuff. I mean, Alderaan was a major player in the galactic cosmos, and we've never gotten to see it. We could have seen it in the prequel trilogy. We could have seen it in Rogue One. I mean, we theoretically could have seen it in the – they would have made sense that that story could take you to Alderaan before it was destroyed. But this is our first chance to see it planet level. We get to see young Leia. I will say let's just jump into it. What do you think about young Leia? It took me a little bit to get used to her, but she really apes – what I remember of Carrie Fisher. She certainly fits in what I could imagine a young Carrie Fisher version of Leia would be.
Well, and here's the thing. I am not even going to address all of the criticism, but
there can't be criticism for a kid.
Whatever criticism you have of the storyline, here's what I think of it, and hopefully it addresses some of that in my take on it. First of all, I was all in immediately. I thought, oh, fantastic. Young Leia, great. Okay. Seeing Flea as from Red Hot Chili Peppers as the bounty hunter or whatever he was.
Yeah.
A lot of people say, that took me out of it. Not me. I thought it was cool, Flea.
I thought it was great that it finally brought the Back to the Future and Star Wars universes together.
Of course.
By the way, he played Needles in Back to the Futures 2 and 3.
Just in case somebody didn't know that. Prove it, McFly. Okay, listen. I have a daughter who is 9 years old, pushing 19. This little girl, they're like, oh, here we got a spunky girl. I'm sorry. This is exactly like a 9-year-old, 10-year-old would act. My daughter says the silliest, craziest, most poignant and bizarre things that as I watched young Leia. First of all, let's remember, not even what we're talking about, 9, 10 years later, Princess Leia aboard a ship in custody says, oh, Tarkin, starts knocking him, starts knocking Vader to his face. She is fearless. She has so much attitude.
Oh, wait, you're talking in
I'm talking
a New
Carrie
Hope.
Fisher in a
okay,
New
so
Hope.
When she's 19,
immediately
right.
when we meet Carrie Fisher 9 years later, I can see this little girl, this 10-year-old, being Carrie Fisher.
Well, and that's
being
that
Leia.
To me is the key, because we already know.
Does it fit? And I think
we
it fits.
If it was just her, you'd be just like, oh, great. Here's another kid that adults are writing to speak like
and
an adult.
And pushing it forward, this kind of an agenda. No, no.
But since we already know how her character is, she actually fits.
Yes.
This is one time where actually going back and doing something different actually works and helps make the character even better over the course of all of her life, I thought. And it did. It took me a couple of episodes. Like, my brother texted me, and he was like, I like it. And I was like, I like her, but she's just a little bit annoying. Give me a little bit more. But by the third episode, I was all in. I was sold. She's great. And she looks enough like Carrie Fisher.
Agreed.
I mean, that's the funny thing is you always think – I was thinking about this for the Winning Time series on HBO about the Lakers and Celtics. You figure you can get somebody that looks like somebody you're used to,
right,
or you can get somebody who acts. But to find one who can act and happens to look like this very specific person you're looking for, that feels like it's pretty lucky. Like, it's really lucky. And it feels lucky.
I think it's very good.
I'm happy lucky, but.
Oh, I think it's just fantastic to get, again, true, deep Star Wars fans who have been longing for just a lot more color and context surrounding things that you've imagined. Having Bail Organa, yes, Jimmy Smits is older, so what? I don't care. The fact that he's there.
It doesn't matter.
On a balcony talking about past Carthul or whatever this mountain range was. Just tiny little lines that George Lucas was so brilliant in painting a picture. One of the first lines from C-3PO in A New Hope was about the spice mines of Kessel, right? Okay, so we've got that. We've got this richness where you don't have to know what he's talking about. You don't have to know. The exposition doesn't have to tell every last...
Right.
See, exposition...
Exactly.
To me, so this series, to me, when it started off with limited dialogue and yet told and divulged about these characters through actions and through scenes. I loved that. The fact that you have little scenes and dialogues and conversations also that just kind of pepper in things that you can think about afterward. You can fill in all these blanks by these little comments. I love that because I hate the exposition that says, don't you know that the reason we're walking over here is that we're doing this and that? It has to tell the whole story in a cheesy way. This one, I love the pace of development. And then, of course, once it gets to, you know, part two and three, and then it's off to the races and you're going, holy cow. This is crazy.
I like seeing Leia's mom too, Brea Organa. We've only heard her referred to. We saw her for even less than we saw the planet Alderaan in episode 3 of Holding the Baby. Yeah. And we got a chance to hear from her. You assume she must be an amazing woman because she's the one who had the most direct influence over Leia all of the 19 years before Alderaan was destroyed. And so, you know, those moments when Obi-Wan looks at Leia and you know, she doesn't know who he is and she doesn't know how he's related. That very funny line, are you my father?
Oh,
I wish I was.
But see, you say funny line. I thought it was heartbreaking. There's so many moments in here where
it's both, but it was a funny, like,
she doesn't
speaking
know,
of that, you well, have no idea honestly, who your dad is.
She doesn't know her birth mother, her birth father. She understands that she's kind of an outcast in this. She was adopted and her cousin tells her such, right? That she's not a true Organa. And yeah. Then Bail comes in with a great fatherly moment. Again, these touching moments that I'm looking for.
And they don't take too
story.
Long for exposition either. Like, that's the thing. They don't feel like a long, drawn out scene just so they can get Bail acting like a father figure. Like, they found a way to just make it just kind of flow naturally.
Right.
There's a party. Party's a great way for a cousin to show up, say a snide thing, so that Bail can come and fix it.
Did you notice 3PO in the background? And I think R2-D2 as well. Oh, yeah. And
I think I did.
You didn't quite hear him. You could kind of hear him in the background. And my kid's like, that's 3PO. Look at his leg. Look at R2. You're like, oh, okay. Well, Captain Antilles is their owner. I mean, he's Alderaanian. He has to be because
Captain Antilles might have been there for all we know.
Right.
Or he was out working on the ship.
Working with Bail. Yeah. Anyway, going on from there, as you move forward and you get Reva and you're wondering about her motivations, it's revealed. It's actually the first time I watched it, I'm thinking, okay, what's her deal? And then the next couple of times that I watched it, I go, okay, well, she's got a bone to pick with the Jedi because I believe, and I think, I don't know if this is obvious, but I believe she was there at the temple. She gets abandoned by the Jedi. She calls him cowards. And so this is a personal vendetta. She's allowed herself to be taken to the dark side. It's a lot about power with her, but it's a lot about resentment and a personal vendetta against Obi-Wan Kenobi.
But ambition, too.
Like, oh, for sure. She wants to get in a good place with Vader, for sure.
I don't know. I don't know if there's a personal connection to... I hadn't thought... I never felt like as I was watching it that she had a personal connection to Obi-Wan, and that may turn out to be the case. That wouldn't surprise me since you say it. But mine was just, my thought was like, she understands what Kenobi means to Vader more, I think, than the other Inquisitors do, and realizes if she can deliver him, like, there's nothing that they could do. There's nothing that they could do that could surpass for what that would mean in Vader's eyes than her delivering Obi-Wan. And she obviously knew enough to know that Obi-Wan had left him wounded. How she knows that, I don't know. Maybe that'll be revealed.
Right.
Because she's like, he's not dead. Like, can you imagine Darth Vader saying, okay, Inquisitors, gather around while I tell you the history of ended up in this armor. So she knows something.
Yes.
However that is, she knows more about that relationship than the other Inquisitors do, don't care.
I don't know if they will show it or not, but I believe that she was in the Jedi Temple and glanced over and saw Anakin leading the charge and realized he had turned and then allowed herself to be convinced, wait a second, he was right, the Jedi are corrupt, and then she sees that they also were not, I think it's very deep-rooted, they did not protect us. Yoda didn't protect us, Obi-Wan didn't protect us, they took off, they did not die here protecting these children, and I was that child. I think it's a very deep kind of a thing, but anyway.
Okay, so since you brought that, was one of the things I was going to ask you, is do you think that the Inquisitors are essentially those kids that got away at
the beginning of the
episode?
I think the line, I watched it again yesterday, and the line is, Obi-Wan says, some of them are former Jedi, or he says many, the word is many, many a former Jedi who have, so many were former Jedi because they were the Force sensitives that once Anakin and or the Emperor decided to keep these ones around, we'll turn them, and they were able to turn them. I mean, look, the whole original trilogy, they're trying to turn Luke, and they think that there may be an opportunity to do so, and then Darth Vader says to him in Return of the Jedi, if you will not turn to the dark side, then perhaps she will, your twin sister, right? So they're always working to turn people to the dark side because they know the seductive nature of the dark side is too much if you're force sensitive. So,
well, and I just, for better or worse, I read the novelization of Rise of Skywalker over the last couple of weeks.
Uh-huh.
You know, it didn't... It helped a few things in the movie because you were allowed to hear thoughts and things like that that we didn't get to hear otherwise through dialogue in the movie. So knowing some of the thoughts that Leia had, since obviously they couldn't have Carrie Fisher speak any of those lines, knowing some of the thoughts that Rey had and knowing that the novelizations under the Disney label are considered canon.
Right.
This idea of when you kill a Sith, the Emperor had figured out that he can like send his essence into them. That's essentially what he was saying to Rey. Kill me now, Rey, sure, so I can take over you.
Right.
Send my essence into you. So there's this whole thing about the Sith dying and being able to send their essence into each other.
Sure.
That, I forgot why I even brought this up now.
Well, I was just whatever, with...
But it made, that's what triggered me was this thought of the Sith and like needing them to gain power
well, so
from each other.
So if force sensitives, obviously they're going to use beings that are force sensitive.
Yeah,
to
so
their
the idea of turning
purposes.
Him to the dark side. Yeah. So Vader needed Luke to turn to the dark side. You know, in his mind, he was thinking of it. Now I understand what I was saying. In his mind, he was thinking of it as you and I together can destroy the Emperor and bring order to the galaxy, which is really what he seemed to be after. Is order.
Right.
You know, even when he was his conversations with Padme back on Naboo was. You know, like this is got a bunch of disorder. We need to get this organized. Here's what you do. You tell them the right thing to do and then you make them do it.
Right.
And so
which,
but
know,
for
look,
the Emperor, Luke then becomes the replacement for the disappointment that Vader was by being defeated by Obi-Wan and now being a shell. I mean, super powerful still, but not powerful like he was when he was still human.
And the fact that he wouldn't have to have a robot, you know, more machine than man. You could have a man, right, who
so
is fully...
So the Emperor's fine for turning, but the Emperor's already thinking, well, good, I don't need you anymore, Vader.
Right. So that kind of puts Vader in the position of where we get to see him now, which is fully powerful, dark side wielder who is, if not trying to prove himself constantly, well, no, he is because that's his master. His master is Sidious. And Sidious
they have a sick, twisted relationship.
Yeah. I mean,
it's never been good, but Anakin doesn't have anybody else now.
How about Darth Vader, man? Darth Vader.
Okay.
Wow.
We're going to talk about that after the break because that by itself, you know, when I was rewatching, I found myself partially not caring about the whole rest of the episode, episode 3 of Obi-Wan. It was like, when do we get to Darth Vader? Because I got to see that again. But that's how I felt about the Phantom Menace after a while, too. All right, when do we get to Duel of the Fates? Fan Effect, Obi-Wan. Need no more intro than that. Dan Spindle from KSL TV is with me. And now we get to the part of the Obi-Wan series that we were promised early on. We got a tease at the end of the episode of episode 2 when we see Vader in the back to tank open his eyes.
Well, that was after the first one, wasn't it?
Was that the first one?
Yeah, after the first
okay,
one.
Okay, so at the end of the very
Anakin.
First episode. See, now I've got my timeline mixed up. Is that when he found out that Anakin was still alive? I swear that was at the end of episode 2.
Well, no, because... Oh, now we're going to be messed up.
But anyway, at the end of one of the episodes, Obi-Wan learns that Anakin's alive.
Yeah.
Obi-Wan uses the Force, which is, I'm assuming, kind of how Vader finally knows for sure. Because I'm guessing the Grand Inquisitor believed Kenobi was alive, but didn't know it until... Until he appeared on that planet.
It was
planet.
The end of part 2. You're
Daya,
right.
I believe.
Dayu, yeah.
On that planet.
Cool planet.
Yeah. Like Tokyo.
No,
a whole
tell
planet
you
full of Tokyo.
Can I tell you what I liked about the beginning of that was that the person who approaches Obi-Wan and says, hey, you want to buy some of the spice or whatever? And they have this exchange. I thought it was, again, I'm not knocking the prequels. I'm just saying in the prequels when the guy says, hey, you want some death sticks? And he goes, you don't want to sell me death sticks. I don't want to sell you death sticks. You're going to go home and think about your life. I'm going to go home and think about my life. It's just kind of a cheesy
But that
thing.
Was a fun way to
it
see him
funny.
Use the Force mind
But in
influence.
This case, I thought... taking things seriously. It's very serious.
Am I the only
that?
One that got Breaking Bad vibes when he's walking through the lab in like...
Oh boy, that was full on red. Oh yeah. I looked at the kids and said, there are a lot of drugs in this Star Wars planet. But did you know that's his daughter? That's Ewan McGregor's daughter?
Oh, I didn't
says,
know
hey,
that.
Old man, do you want some of this stuff? And she goes, hey, listen, if your daughter's here, you never see her again, but take three of these. You'll never know that she existed. I'm going, oh my gosh, this is... It's just so serious. And then when you see, how about this other reveal? I was going to call him Rex. You see
Tim
Morrison.
Yeah, Tamara Morrison.
As a vet of the Clone Wars and what happens to those clones afterwards. This guy either had his chip fried or whatever happened, because you kind of figure maybe he'd sense a Jedi or something.
Well, I got the impression that that's what happened to a lot of clone troopers. Once Order 66 was executed, there was no need for them anymore.
Oh, he gets cast aside. That was a very kind of real world thing, too, to go veterans and homeless and what happens to them afterward. And it was just a sad moment, but very interesting in canon.
Good soldiers follow orders.
Yeah, finally seeing, you know, like a Tem Morrison clone. Anyway, Dayu, I thought it was a fascinating planet, looked great, very much what George Lucas had looked to create for his Star Wars television show that never was. It was called 1313 or whatever. I loved it. I love just being immersed in that world and kind of knowing that Obi-Wan's on his own. He says, I'm trying to track this ship. Well, you can't track that here. This is Dayu. You know, there's you're in a dead spot.
Being tracked.
Can you hear me now? Can you hear
me now? Which is why there's a bunch of underworld stuff.
Lots of underworld
stuff. Okay, so now we're on. We're going to get to Darth Vader, I promise.
We will.
But we're on Dayu, and we meet Kumail Nanjiani's character, Haji.
Loved him.
Here's an interesting question for you.
Loved him.
Do you think he's a real Jedi?
No.
Are you sure?
I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure. I mean, if
because first you're supposed to think he is a real Jedi, then you realize he's doing all these tricks with magnets.
Right.
Then he suddenly knows who Obi-Wan is. I think this is a Jedi hiding in plain sight as a shyster. I really do.
He could be.
That's what I think.
Look, I usually, again, the slapstick stuff for me is kind of difficult.
I love Kumail Nanjiani, by the way. He's one of the funniest people.
Well, I was going to say, in this case, I really did enjoy, because I'm going, what's this guy doing? What's his deal? Oh, this is perfect. It's this little Oliver Twist kind of thing. He's got his kids out in the streets. Hey, we could help you out. We got a Jedi over here. Then the Jedi, yes, I feel the Force flowing through me. I love how he tells his contact, this is a Jedi mind trick. He tells him it's a Jedi mind trick.
Or when he's like, I got to do this over the phone.
I'm out of your mind. Oh, no, I'm out. Okay. I thought it was funny. I really enjoyed the fact that he kind of faced off with Reva towards the end.
Yeah.
And she didn't kill him.
See, that
him,
was the
goes,
thing.
Ow.
So that became the noble. This is why I thought he was a Jedi, kind of a noble thing.
For sure.
He knew who Obi-Wan was. And it made perfect sense of, like, why not hide in plain sight?
Sure.
You pretend to be a Jedi, and then if they bust you, they see the magnets and like, oh, you're obviously not a Jedi.
Right.
That's a great way to hide being a Jedi.
Sure.
Is to look like somebody trying to pretend to be a Jedi, but with tricks.
Yeah.
So we'll see if that comes back. I can't believe that a guy of that wattage is only going to be in the show for that little bit of a thing.
I thought it was just great. I just really enjoyed that element of it. I really enjoyed it.
So we find out. So a couple before we actually get to Vader himself, these are some questions I wanted to ask you. What did you think about? You've mentioned it already, but. Oh, I was going to say, what did you think Reva's story is? But you kind of already answered that.
Yeah, I really do think Reva was at the temple, was a youngling, was being trained, watched everyone get slaughtered in front of her, maybe even saw Yoda and Obi-Wan take off or something. Or, I mean, I guess they were in different parts of the galaxy. I mean,
no, they ended up at the temple changing the beacon.
At the temple. Was she in there, though, at the time? What did she see? Whatever she thinks she saw, she feels abandoned by the Jedi. And maybe was saved by Anakin or something, or maybe was, well, I mean, obviously she was allowed
to
live.
Well, they're hunting for sensitive children. They made that clear that they're doing that across the whole galaxy.
So, whether it was there or somewhere else, I believe she felt that the Jedi completely abandoned everyone who's force sensitive and that Vader was able to convince her and convert her. That's what I think.
So then the other question I had is, how do you personally, as a longtime Star Wars fan, had you ever thought about when Anakin found out or when Obi-Wan found out Anakin was still alive? In my mind, I always assumed he put two and two together basically from Tatooine. Like he heard there was a Darth Vader, then he heard about what was going on, and then he thought, okay, somehow he must have survived that. But I liked, just on a personal, like, I enjoy watching movies and hearing stories told. I liked that he found out this way of like, no, that can't be.
And how do you like he's got the ringing in his ears?
Some people didn't like. Apparently the showrunner, Deborah Chow, and I don't remember who wrote it, but I think Favreau helped writing it, but he didn't do the most of the writing. But it was they went and said, hey, can we do this? Does Obi-Wan, like they went to Pablo Hidalgo, who's essentially the holocron for everything, and said, can we have Obi-Wan find out this way? Is there anything anywhere else in canon that would contradict him finding out here? And he's like, there really isn't. So this is now official.
I
kind of thought he always knew.
See, I thought.
But I like that he figured it out.
Once Revenge of the Sith came out, and I thought made it pretty clear when he leaves him to die on the shores of the lava river on Mustafar, I assumed at that point he thought Anakin was dead, right?
Well, I thought he would be dead shortly, but he couldn't bring himself to deal the death blow.
And so I don't think there was any evidence to suggest that he would, on Tatooine, be thinking, and I kind of hoped that this would be the case too, as I envisioned this series coming out. I thought, I bet you Obi-Wan is going to find out somehow, right? There's going to be a specific moment to find out this is how he knows. Because obviously he didn't want to believe and he didn't feel through the Force. And I mean, he's relatively, I don't know if you want to say cut off from the Force, but I mean, he's making himself as inconspicuous as possible.
If he cuts himself off from the Force, I think he did only because it took until Leia was nearly at the ground before he finally decided to use the Force again.
It was cute that she said, I want to float. Make me float. Can't you guys make people float? And so he has to do it. But you saw the exertion that it took as he hung over the side of that building to save her life. It was not an easy thing for Obi-Wan Kenobi, who we know to be a powerful Jedi Master.
He's
working his way back here.
Your powers are weak, old man.
Yeah.
All right, so that was what I wanted to do. All right, without any further ado, all right, we got to hear this first. Because this is as much associated with him as anything else. But we finally, in episode 3, get to see the greatest villain, movie villain of all time.
Wow.
How do you feel like, before we get in, how do you feel his reveal was handled?
Well,
the first
reveal...
time we see him is this.
The Grand Inquisitor means nothing. Kenobi is all that matters now. Is that understood?
Oof.
Yes, my lord.
Oh, perfection.
I have been watching you, Third Sister. I know what it is you seek. Prove yourself, and the position of Grand Inquisitor is yours.
Oh, really? Thank you, Lord Vader. And then he says... And if you fail me, you'll die.
You won't live long enough to regret it.
Now, listen. Kay. The first time we saw, though, was when he was being assembled.
Yes.
We've never seen an assembly of Darth Vader this way. They showed his severed...
Although, but we saw that in the trailer, so...
Well, but they not this full thing where they show his limbs hanging off and they show everything go in. I mean, you did see
a few
pieces.
Okay, we didn't see the spine. That's true.
I mean, it was just to the nth degree of what you ever pictured, Darth Vader being assembled. Holy cow. Okay. I thought gruesome, grisly, pure pain is what Darth Vader is. His whole existence is pain, right? Now, I say that having a little... I think we've talked about this before. I read the book Lost Stars, which is canon because it's in the Disney era. Fantastic for anyone who wants to read a great... I don't read a lot of Star Wars literature. Lost Stars is fantastic. That talks a lot about the survival suit that is his... life,
yes.
The breathing apparatus.
And I believe it's in canon that the Emperor deliberately made it so he never heals.
It looks like it stabs right through him. I mean, that would make sense for
the
Palpatine
idea is
to do that.
Keep him in pain, keep him angry, keep him on the dark side.
So you see that, but then it goes back to old school, original Darth Vader, speaking forcefully like a way we have not heard since Return of the Jedi. And the reason we haven't heard it since Return of the Jedi is because James Earl Jones' real voice... of 2015 technology or 2016, whatever it was,
for Rogue One,
was a weaker voice. He sounds a little, he sounds like an 80-something
year old man. A little bit nasally. He's now 91.
Well, you do know, we were talking about this the other day. The one thing we did talk about, folks, was that re-speecher is included in the credits. And it says, voice conversions provided by re-speecher. Now, that's this incredible technology that just with this one episode says to me, Darth Vader is now eternal. Like, what we have now is the way to convert James Earl Jones's voice into the Return of the Jedi-esque era voice.
Yes.
Perfect Vader. Powerful Vader. Evil. I mean, let's talk evil. We're going to get to all the evil. Holy cow. But just the way he's speaking to the hologram.
That
of the,
sounded right.
It just sounded perfect.
Honestly, and I hate to say this, and you know, Tyson Webb, who's a good friend of the podcast, and he actually has a full Darth Vader cosplay.
Oh, wow. Like official.
It's great. Yes. Oh, no, it's amazing. He's appeared at stuff for the company
and
different things. I believe it's officially 501st approved,
oh,
which means it has to like meet all these specifications.
Oh, yeah.
It's very good. He studied like all of Darth Vader's appearances in the films. And, you know, when in Revenge of the Sith, when Darth Vader folded his arms on the bridge of the Star Destroyer at the end, he was really upset by that because Vader doesn't fold his arms. Vader hooks his thumbs into his belt.
Uh-huh.
Like that's the level that he had studied
and a cosplayer
Darth
would
Vader.
Know, yeah.
Yeah. And so There are little things about Darth Vader that we've either consciously or subconsciously memorized. And so when I – Darth Vader, for better or worse, and I feel for David Prowse, but he's James Earl Jones. Like,
yes,
he's James Earl Jones. If we can't see the face, it's the voice.
Sure.
It's one of the things that we had a hard time with Luke when his face didn't look quite right.
Yeah.
Up until the moment that he talked, Luke moving with the lightsaber, being young, doing all of the things was cool. But then the real, you know, us grown-ups, and I'm assuming you were kind of like me, like, are they going to show his face?
Sure.
How's it going to look?
And they fully did it.
And they fully did. And it looked good. But it didn't look 100% good. And then they fixed it by the Book of Boba Fett.
Absolutely.
So, well, but that's the thing. So now if they can do that, then we just need Mark Hamill's voice.
Right.
But with Darth Vader, it was always the voice.
Like, did you see the movements,
it was always
though?
A voice. I no offense to David Prowse.
Sure.
Really, none intended. But if it was David Prowse's voice, then I would expect to hear David Prowse's voice.
But you mentioned the movements, and that was Dave Prowse, who was this 6 foot six whatever, moving around in a strength positioning, you know, bodybuilder type of a way. So I will
I'm not minimizing.
No,
but,
no. And I'm,
but for
I'm
the
just
character
saying,
of Vader to work right, the voice
have,
has to be
the
right.
The voice is perfect, but one of the movements right after he talked to Reva, and he's sitting on his throne, which we've never seen, in his castle on Mustafar.
Yes, on Mustafar.
He stands up and militarily does this side, like to the left movement, or to the, I'm sorry, to the right, and moves over to the window. It was just so exact in its motion that I swear someone must be looking like a movement coach and saying, Hayden, this is how Vader would move. Let's watch Dave Prowse. He wouldn't saunter on over.
Right.
It would be about face, movements, very militaristic because
he's a robot.
Well,
and if you think he can't move that athletically, so
it just worked perfectly.
Yes.
And it was such a tiny little touch that worked perfectly.
Hearing that voice.
The Grand Inquisitor means
it just
nothing.
Sounds so good.
I love what he says.
Kenobi is all that matters now.
Yeah,
is that understood?
Is that understood? Yeah, and then, by the way,
perfect.
In an article on Slash Film, they did say the re-speecher was used, and when they asked Hayden Christensen if Jones was going to return to voice the character, he just said no comment.
Ha, ha. So, well, no comment for that reason.
Exactly. But that was before the series came out.
Well, and I even wonder if, I don't know how the technology works. Perhaps it is a James Earl Jones setting that can make my voice sound like James Earl Jones. Because I figured, as I'm listening back yesterday, I watched it again, and I thought, it could be that Hayden kind of did some pacing things and you know, metered out the dialogue, and then they used that to help it as well. However they did it, it's
it sounded
Darth
like
Vader.
He's voice acting, not just saying lines.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it doesn't sound like, would you like to take a call from the Emperor?
No, no. And it's again, it's not monotone. The range.
The
like
Emperor.
You said, what you just played
Will
right
you
there.
Accept the charges?
Will you accept the charge? I just loved the introduction and thought, oh boy, what are we going to get now?
Okay.
And
I'm with you.
I
wondered, were we going to get the duel early or were we going to get the duel late?
Oh boy.
Well, we got a duel early. So let's talk about the showdown.
Yes.
What have you become?
I am what you made me.
Goosebumps. Goosebumps.
Again, I really almost think that it's a Hayden-delivered line combined with the James Earl Jones feature on Re-Speecher.
Yeah, I don't know how Re-Speecher works, but if they can make him say stuff.
I picture Anakin saying those lines of, you know, when just like on Mustafar when they exchange lines. I will say, too, every Darth Vader line in this part three I thought was so accurate to what I wanted to hear, what I believed he would say in the way that I thought he would say it. It was just so.
That's why I thought it had to be James
Vader
Earl Jones
lines.
Doing something because
great Vader
you
lines.
Can't. I'm sorry, but there's no way that you can take Re-Speecher and say, OK, what I really want is I want the up emphasis
I don't know,
on this syllable.
I don't know,
maybe
so.
They can.
Think about auto-tune. It can make people sing in tune.
Yes,
Andy.
But all that does is change pitch.
Right.
It doesn't take somebody who's singing flat monotone and make the vocals go up and down. That still has to be done by somebody.
Agreed.
That's why I feel like James Earl Jones voiced it, and then they were able to use this to modulate it back to the sound that it was 30 years
ago.
Whatever
they've done.
I love it.
I want to throw them a parade,
please
okay?
Please do. Have Darth Vader
read Winnie the Pooh forever.
And I will buy that audiobook, okay?
Piglet, it is a blustery day. I mean, look, so... Boy, people are nitpicking this thing apart. Ah, look at them. They're fighting.
No nitpicking here.
They're fighting in a construction zone. It made perfect sense to me. It was pure darkness. So you had the reflection of the blue and the red.
Yes.
You had, I mean, come on.
Okay, they actually captured scenes from essentially every lightsaber duel.
Yes.
I mean, think about it. So the way the red and the blue is from Attack of the Clones when Anakin is dueling Dooku.
Sure.
After he cuts the power line. We got that similar visual. We got the steam from Bespin. We got Darth Vader fighting with one hand. We got...
Yes. Wasn't that incredible?
What else did I write down? There's the chase, like through Bespin. There's the taunt kind of a thing, similar to what he did in episode 4. Similar, some of the vocal inflections I thought were a lot closer to Return of the Jedi than they were. I mean, it was Obi-Wan and Anakin dueling again, so you could look at it as, Mustafar, although obviously not nearly at the speed. But
shout out to the sequel trilogy when Kylo Ren's lightsaber, I believe, is one that goes to the ground in the snow and shoots up some of the steam. So Darth Vader takes his blade to the ground.
Lights, whatever those things were.
Yeah, that was. So think of it as fuel. Because when I saw it, I'm thinking it's some sort of a rock, which it is.
I thought it was like sharp things that he was going to throw. Oh, yeah. And then using the force. It really, I thought, was reminiscent for the Bespin duel, almost start to finish.
For sure.
There was a lot of it.
Steam, Obi-Wan using the steam. I saw people joking about, okay, Vader's nemesis, is that dual nemesis, is sand. He hates sand, and he hates steam. Vader hates steam.
Here's the thing. Has Vader ever lost a duel where you sprayed him with steam?
I mean...
Nope.
No.
He's now 2-for-2.
Obi-Wan was in a bad way there, okay? He was in a bad way. Let's talk about it.
Okay.
When he lit it on fire and pulled... First of all, he lifted people into the air, Andy. Have we ever seen that before, ever?
Yeah, we did.
I'm talking...
In Rogue One.
Okay, in Rogue One,
he was lifting up some of the soldiers.
But he throws him up against the roof.
But the idea...
Against a surface. This one, he's holding multiple people. We didn't even talk about the next snap
of
the
teenager. Wait, who else was he holding up besides Obi-Wan?
That guy out that he pulled him into the street, into the air.
Oh,
right. And then his teenage son comes out, Dad, Dad, and he goes, snap, you're dead. He killed a child on camera in front of everyone. We audibly, in my house, went, oh, like, oh, if you wanted to take Vader to that level... of evil.
I remember saying, wow, they did that.
We know that he killed younglings. They do not show him kill and slaughter the younglings. This one was a child that he snapped his neck in the street. I had such, I don't want to say mixed feelings. It was...
It works perfectly for the character.
Enjoying death and destruction? Is that the right thing to say? I didn't know what to say.
Nostalgia is a powerful thing, Dan.
Boy.
It'll make you overlook a lot of things.
Look, the fact that they showed this, that is Darth Vader.
Yes.
If he's crushing a larynx by holding a guy up by his neck or holding him in midair, which we saw him do, and then hold up Obi-Wan Kenobi, who was no doubt the more experienced Jedi back in the day. This is full on Vader, dark side, hold him in the air, and Obi-Wan can do nothing about it.
So let's talk about that. Obi-Wan was completely impotent against Vader.
He was.
How do you feel about that?
Well, only because
I think he was just out of practice?
Yes.
Do you think that they'll explain it in the show why he was beaten so easily and badly?
I don't know if they need to say too much from what they've already said. He's been trying to reach out to Qui-Gon episode after episode.
Oh, yeah, that's kind of heartbreaking, too.
Master Qui-Gon, are you there? Master Qui-Gon. Why do they keep having him do that? They're showing that he does not have that level of spiritual connection right now for whatever reason. The reason being, and I don't think he's purposely...
Yeah, where are those exercises that Yoda supposedly gave him?
Well, I think they did, but then I think something happened on Tatooine or he decided, you know
so
what?
So then will they explain
the best?
That?
I don't know if they need to. He'll say, you know what's going to happen? Qui-Gon, when he does appear to him, he's going
to
say...
Yeah, we're going to get a Liam Neeson sighting before this is all done.
For sure. Even though Liam Neeson recently, they said, would you do it again? Oh, sure. If they wanted to call me up, I'd do it. Sure, I'd do it. Like, come on now, Liam Neeson. You know you already did it. What's going to happen is, this is my opinion, you will get that connection because from the very first beginning in the cave, Master Qui-Gon, are you there? It's setting it up, obviously. You're going to get the connection. He's going to say, Master, it's just that... And he's going to say some line or two that says, the safest thing for me to do was to be as far away from the light as possible so as to not attract attention. He's going to say something like that, which is, listen, I'm out of practice because I couldn't practice. I didn't have my lightsaber. I didn't have anything because my sole focus was to stay hidden, stay safe, and keep Luke alive. That was his only purpose. So Qui-Gon now is going to get him up to speed to beat Vader, and he's going to beat Vader.
Oh, you think that Qui-Gon, we're going to have a training montage?
Maybe not a training montage.
No, I'm kidding.
We will understand that Qui-Gon Jinn gets him prepared to beat Vader, and he has to beat Vader. You know why? Because in episode 4, Vader says to him, when we last met, I was the pupil.
When I left you, I was but the learner. So.
Yeah, I was the learner. So whatever Obi-Wan knows more than Darth Vader.
Again, that line originally meant, according to the Return of the Jedi novelization, Vader left Obi-Wan to follow the Emperor.
Sure.
And then Obi-Wan went to get him back. He didn't.
But he also
supposedly
says,
at the time, he didn't know his wife was pregnant either.
Okay.
Which has also been retconned. So obviously, that may end up being the case. I'm just laughing because one of the worst movies of all time is called the No Retreat, No Surrender.
Okay.
It came out in the 80s.
I have not seen this.
It's so bad. It's so bad. If you ever catch it on a rerun, it's hilariously bad. A kid who wants to learn karate. And Jean-Claude Van Damme is actually the bad guy in this, and he's a Russian. This is how early in the 80s. But he trains with Bruce Lee's ghost. Like, he goes to Bruce Lee's grave and prays, and Bruce Lee's ghost shows up and trains him to fight.
This is it.
And then he defeats
That's what we're gonna get.
Jean-Claude Van Damme at the end. So when you're like, yeah, Qui-Gon's going to come and train him, that was immediately what came to my mind, is like the ghost of Bruce Lee coming to train. Oh, I hope it doesn't do that.
Well, it makes sense in the Star Wars canon.
I hope I didn't just ruin if that happens for a bunch of people.
I will watch that after the fact now. I will not watch it beforehand.
Don't watch it beforehand.
Well, do you know what? I think it's not going to be like here, you know, different moves
not
with
best
lightsabers.
Of the best. No retreat, no surrender.
Best of the best. I have
that
best
was a
of the best.
Different karate move.
I think what it'll be is helping him reconnect with the Force in a way that he has heretofore.
Well, he has to be ready to be absorbed into the Force by
Absolutely.
The time they duel, and we still got.
And he will be prepared.
We've still got 10 more years or so.
Well, and what does he do? I think we are going to see people who thought this duel wasn't good enough. I think we're going to get a final duel.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's
no,
what we're setting
if
it up
people
for.
Thought this wasn't good enough. Well, honestly, I'll
I
be honest.
It was perfect.
If they didn't have another fight, I would still be okay with how this one played
oh,
out.
Oh, I loved it.
Because I
loved
still
it.
Think that nothing that happened in this duel negates any of the dialogue that comes later in
I agree
A
with
New
that.
Hope. I don't think it does.
Do you know who we didn't talk about? You know who I loved? What's her name?
The girl?
Tala? Is that her name? Something like
oh,
that?
Oh, yeah. Let me look that
She's
up.
She's the Imperial spy. Oh, she's great. I loved her. And I don't know if it's the perfect English accent of whatever you have to have for an Imperial and that she's a spy. I just thought her character worked so well. It was acted so well.
Indira Varma is Tala Durrant.
Tala. Great character.
Disillusioned Imperial officer on the
and
planet
she's not,
Mapuzo.
And she's not dead, thank goodness. I thought she was great. But what
She was originally conceived as they were writing the show the first drafts as
okay.
a potential love interest for Obi-Wan, and
okay.
they changed their mind.
You know, look, I'm all for...
Obi-Wan has one love.
Satine?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm all for a more romantic involvement in Star Wars, because, I mean, since Han and Leia, we really don't have much of a love story. They kind of made Kylo, Reylo, whatever happened at the end of that, but that wasn't a build-up with a love story. So I think they could bring that in more. But I thought Tala, great character. Leia, really getting serious in this. Oh,
Tala's reveal was pretty cool, too. You're like,
good.
Obi-Wan screwed. Obi-Wan
yep.
and Leia are screwed.
Yep. Oh, we also, right before that, the fact that this, he uses a blaster exceptionally well, which is hilarious and fantastic, so uncivilized.
The stormtrooper that gets cut in half.
Oh,
that was pretty cool.
My daughter had kind of, I was watching it with her for the first time. She hadn't watched it yet. My high school graduate daughter. She was looking at her phone for a second. I said, no, look. And then she looks up and the guy gets sliced in half by the laser gate, which was great. The mole character, fantastic. A lot of tension built up. So
yeah, I thought the mole character reminded me
that
of
was good.
Cliff Clavin. He really gave me a Cliff Clavin from Cheers 5.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's why I didn't realize it was Zach Braff's voice. I thought it
was Zach Braff?
That's Zach Braff.
Did not know
they
that.
They altered his voice a bit, kind of made it lower. Can we just say, I have not mentioned Deborah Chow's name. She is a genius. She is
She's done great.
I don't even want to say an able-bodied director. She is fantastic. I would say Deborah Chow, from her episodes of Mandalorian, and Bryce Dallas Howard, if people were really,
Both are really
hungering
good.
For a female presence in the director's chair, hold holy cow, let Deborah Chow and Bryce Dallas Howard do as much as they want in Star Wars. I think they are fantastic.
I agree.
The visuals are great and rich. And the what's the name of the director of photography, the DP for this? It's like a last name, same as the first, Chung Yun Chung, I think is the name. Boy, fantastic as well. Great, great cinematography, direction, art direction. I just loved it. I just love all of it. Just fantastic. I mean, I think the visuals are just second to none.
Oh, Chung Hoon Chung. There we go.
Chung Hoon Chung. Fantastic. But I would say if those who thought that Book of Boba Fett was a little one-dimensional simply being on Tatooine, this one is giving us what we want. Different planets,
look,
different
atmospheres. It's not their fault that the story of the whole Star Wars saga started on Tatooine. It means we're going to go there a lot.
But how great is it that...
It's also an easy thing to produce.
Well, but just enjoy it.
You
just
got to get sand. I know, it doesn't bother me.
And move on to the next thing. Andor, which is coming up, and we shouldn't give any of this time to Andor because that'll have plenty of time when it comes
in.
That trailer for Andor just shows you that, wow, they're going to be on site of various locations that look just like Rogue One. It looks so good.
I didn't get this goosebumps like for Andor that everybody else did.
I think Andor looks... Well, go back and watch Rogue One and then watch it because it pulls you right back into Rogue One. But Kenobi.
I have one more question for Kenobi before we move off of Darth Vader.
Sure.
I don't even remember now where. It was a link off of Facebook. And maybe it was on Screen Rant or Comic Book Resources. Did Darth Vader doom the Empire by not just killing Kenobi when he had him in the flames? Because you remember he force pushed him out of the fire.
Sure.
Go bring him to me. And that gave Tala a chance to fire on him and reignite the fire and let Obi-Wan get away. I mean, you can say obviously it did because if you look at how the dominoes played out. But... You know, so is Darth Vader responsible for the fall of the Empire?
Darth Vader does his master's bidding, which Palpatine's pure evil plan is domination and universal domination forever, right? That's not Vader's plan. Of course, we learn in Return of the Jedi that Vader probably at any given time... Well, what does he say to Luke? He says, hey, join me, Luke. Hey, look, we'll overthrow the Emperor. Vader, deep within him, has this... I don't know if familial tie is the right word, but Vader's motivations are very much tied to his connection with his family. Again, I might get ripped apart for that, but
no,
I wondered if he would
how
see
could you
kind
argue against that? That's what the redemption was. They've made
the
it very
side.
Clear.
Yeah.
Dave Filoni made it very clear. Ahsoka is not the reason that, and he had to be very careful in their interactions in Rebels as not to give any indication at all that Vader... His encounters with Ahsoka was anything leading him back towards the light. Filoni's made it very clear. He's like,
children.
It is Luke Skywalker that is the reason that Vader comes
and the
back.
Reason
and
he
then
went
eventually.
To the dark side was Padme. I mean, it was his fear of what does Yoda say to him?
Fear of loss is the path to the dark side.
Yeah, and he says, learn to let go of everything you fear to lose. And he lost his mother. I'm not going to lose somebody again. No, I will have ultimate power and control. And I will not allow these things to happen because I am too powerful for that. I mean, that was almost like Anakin realizing, wait, what everybody says is true. I have more midichlorians than anybody. I am more powerful than anyone ever.
Yeah, at some point it goes to your head.
Yeah, and it went to his head and turned him fully evil. And yet, that's why Obi-Wan Kenobi is a personal vendetta for him. I mean, he didn't have to expend all these resources to find Obi-Wan Kenobi. So him taking him and putting him into the fire and he says, your pain is only begun or whatever. He's full on showing you.
Well, I thought that was a really cool touch that at first I was like, what's he doing? Oh my gosh, he's dragging him in. Like, okay, you thought it was funny to leave me burning alive?
Oh my gosh.
Like, I thought that was actually a really cool, I would have never come up with that on my own.
Oh, the writing,
so whoever,
and the visuals, agreed. Agreed.
Hossein,
I loved it.
The writer. Great job
so
on the
good.
Writing. Great job on the visual. Everything about it is hitting all the right
notes.
We
talked about Vader snapping the kid's neck. How about him dragging the woman through the street as he's walking along and he just leaves his arm down and she keeps dragging behind
him. Until he finally lets her go.
It's the full power unleashed of Darth Vader that we've thought about and envisioned was there on display.
I'm glad you said that because that's what I thought as I was watching it. This is the Darth Vader of my nightmares.
Yep.
Like
I was terrified.
Darth Vader from the beginning. I didn't think Darth Vader. I mean, other than when he chokes the guy out in the first one,
sure.
I didn't think Darth Vader was as scary a guy in A New Hope as he was in Empire Strikes Back. When he's killing his own officers, when he's relentlessly, ruthlessly hunting. the duel with Luke, at first you can tell he, I mean, it took me a few watches, but at first he's screwing around. He's fighting him with one hand,
when
just trying to tempt him.
He jumps off the stairs within that, within the carbon freeze chamber.
And like lands just, where Luke was.
Oh my gosh. But, and you see the cape. It's just, it gets scarier.
But
yeah.
From the moment Luke steams him off the platform.
Yes.
He doesn't say another word until after he cuts off Luke's hand.
Yeah.
Luke works his way down, comes through the hall. They duel in front of the glass. Vader starts chucking big pieces of stuff at him while the Imperial March theme is playing in the background. It goes through the window. Luke goes out, climbs back in. And then at this point, now Vader's not screwing around anymore. Both hands on the saber.
Oh,
he's hammering away at Luke.
That one.
Luke has no choice
block,
but to give ground.
Sparks,
that
block,
moment
sparks,
right
yeah.
there is the Darth Vader of my nightmares.
Yep.
Unstoppable.
Yes.
Luke realizes at this point he's not winning this.
Yep.
He'll be lucky to survive.
Yeah.
And he manages to get a lick in on Vader, which only makes him madder.
Yep.
And then 2 seconds later, his hand's chopped off. That's the Darth. That to me is apex Darth Vader. Nothing he did before and nothing he does after is apex.
One.
Well, until we saw Rogue One, of course. But that
which
was
an add-on.
Like, but that was apex Darth Vader. And so seeing this again, he's chasing Obi-Wan through the streets, just relentlessly stalking
him. How
terrified
him. Was Ewan McGregor, too?
Right. And
what
that
a
was
great a great way to play that character.
It was great. Like,
terrified.
He's not sure how he feels about all this. He's confused. He doesn't know, should he fight back? Should he finally kill Anakin like he probably should have done? Anakin's taunting him. Vader's got him picked up. Like, I was like, that's how you do it. Like, they understood. They understood the character. They understood what made it freaky. They didn't copy too much, I thought, of other things. They did the George Lucas. They made it rhyme with some similar visuals, with some similar things. But it was its own thing. And I knew that Obi-Wan would survive, and yet still you're gripping the thing like, holy cow.
Well, and it allows for Obi-Wan Kenobi's hero's journey arc to continue in that at the beginning of the series, we understand that he can't step in, but it's disappointing that he won't step in.
Yes.
In this case, he says to Tala, take Leia, get her to Alderaan. I've got to distract him. What does he say? I'll buy you some time or something like that. He's willing to go put himself almost to the point where I guess I'll sacrifice myself. I mean, Obi-Wan is off planet away from Luke right now, knowing Luke is the only hope, you know, and it will bring balance.
Right.
Is the chosen one, right? Kind of.
I think that Obi-Wan's starting to get some hints that Leia has more. Like, I don't know if he thinks about the Force, because he is even the one that says that boy is our last hope in Empire Strikes Back.
Right.
But you can tell he can see that Leia's. And maybe that's what reminds him of Padme so much, is just sort of the fierceness and the intelligence and all of those things. Because, you know, he met her when she was a teenage queen also.
Yes.
And so I don't know if they're going to do more about hinting at Leia's Force sensitivity, because really that's never talked about until the sequel trilogy.
No, I liked what Tala said, though. She goes, she's going to be a great fighter someday. And Obi-Wan says, I think she will. And I immediately pictured when she used a blaster and she says, somebody's got to save our skins. And I mean, look, Leia at 19 years old was a leader, a fierce leader who was better than the boys at that. Like, come on, what did she call him in the deleted scene? Laser jockeys or something.
Oh.
It's just fantastic. So I loved it, man. I loved it. And the way they ended with Darth Vader there standing there, you know, you wonder, well, why didn't he just jump over the fire? Why didn't he grab him there? Darth Vader is slow and deliberate. That's what he is. That's what he does. I mean, he's cool and calculating and can't move quickly ever.
It was pretty close. That was the one thing about the Rogue One scene. As awesome as it was, it almost overpowered him. And the only problem with showing that is where it was on the timeline. It was just a week or a few days before
they
duel on the Death Star. So it was like, ooh, that's a pretty big disconnect for such a short time.
Yes.
If he had acted like that here.
Sure.
I wouldn't feel like it was as much of a disconnect. Again, minor quibbles, and I can accept it, and I'll be like, okay, fine. He was super strong here, and he was super slow here. Whatever. Okay.
I have almost nothing to say negative about this. I mean, I won't say anything
Everybody's
negative.
Doing a great job. Seeing Hayden Christensen in the Jedi robe in that scene in the field.
Oh, creepy.
Obi-Wan, imagine seeing him there.
You know what I hope we see now is, I think we're going to get some back to dreams. because you gotta heal Obi-Wan. He's in bad shape right now. He's burned everywhere. So I think if you throw him in some Bacta and we'll get a Clone Wars.
Wouldn't that be cool to have a scene of both Vader and Obi-Wan in Bacta at the same time and each of them remembering the same thing differently?
Okay.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
Yes. Oh, the same scene, but differently. Yes.
Having him remember it playing out from their own point of view.
Very Kevin McAllister style in Home Alone when we know that Uncle Frank said to him, "Look what you did, you little jerk." And yet in his mind, he hears him say, "Look what you did. You little jerk." You remember that? Kevin McAllister imagines it. You're the only one who has to make trouble. So what if we had, and I don't know if they'll bring Ahsoka into this, but if it's Clone Wars era, we could see an Obi-Wan, Anakin, Ahsoka scene quickly from Obi-Wan's perspective, that ties us a little bit more and tugs at the heartstrings a little bit more of who Anakin really is and was to Obi-Wan, right?
Yes.
And so we're going to see maybe a little of that in the flashback.
I hope we get a cameo of Agent Kallus. But this would be pre-turning Agent Kallus.
Yeah, deep cut.
But that would be pretty cool from Rebels.
Well, they didn't have to call him Agent Kallus. You just see him. We're going to be like, oh, look at the mutton chops. We know.
But you'd have to hear his voice, too, because his voice
is
very
distinctive. I like Agent Kallus. I do. Rebels, folks who have not seen Star Wars Rebels, Agent Kallus, great character. Very much kind of like this Tala character.
Except he's way worse than her. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Look, I loved it. Andy, I know you probably could have foreseen my anticipation that was fulfilled. I mean, I was so excited to watch it.
Look, you just didn't want it to fall on its face. You didn't want it to feel ridiculous.
You didn't
want it to feel forced like it's a cash grab.
Well, I also didn't want it to feel claustrophobic, like they couldn't get past their TV budget versus an Obi-Wan Kenobi movie. I feel like this has given us everything that I would hope to see. Honestly, I'm enjoying it.
The actors, the effects.
Yeah, I love it.
It is solid.
Give me more Vader. Give me more Obi-Wan. Let's do this.
Give you more, whatever it is. Give you more. I like it. Well, that brings us to the end of our episode.
If you only knew the power of this show.
Talking about Obi-Wan Kenobi, we will revisit Obi-Wan Kenobi when we are through the final episode. So this is part one, if you will, discussing Obi-Wan. We've got three more weeks. I believe June 22nd is the final episode.
Man.
We've got one this Wednesday on the 8th, 15th, 22nd. So that would be the other three episodes.
Okay.
Three excruciating weeks to get through.
Incredible weeks.
The incredible will be on the Wednesdays. The excruciating will be Thursday through Tuesday.
Anticipation. It's just like Christmas Eve, right? It's so much better than Christmas Day. It's building up.
Dan Spindle, KSL TV. You can follow him on Twitter.
That's right, at Dan Spindle KSL.
Out on Facebook. Are you on Instagram too? You are, aren't
you? Yes, occasionally, sure, yeah.
Okay. Well, check out Dan on social media. Check out the Fan Effect Show on social media at FANEFFECT, Fan Effect Show on Instagram. We have Instagram, but we never use it. So mostly just stick to Twitter and to Facebook. And we will return for another episode of Fan Effect, and we will discuss the final three episodes of Obi-Wan. Yes. Do you have a fun idea or a local fan culture topic you'd like us to explore? Let us know by messaging our Facebook page at Fan Effect Show, where you can also get the latest nerdly updates and join the conversation. Follow us on Instagram at Fan Effect Show and Twitter at Fan Effect Show. Listen regularly on your favorite platform at KSLNewsRadio.com, KSLPodcast.com, or on the KSL News Radio app. Beyond sci-fi, fantasy, gaming, and tech, we're excited to share with you our knowledge and arguments on everything pop culture and fandom on Fan Effect, based in the beautiful Beehive State. Fan Effect celebrates Utah's unique fan culture. By the way, we were voted the number one Star Wars fan state of the Union. And we're excited to bring you local guests that feel the same way. I'm your host, Andy Farnsworth. Again, thanks to our producer, Kellyanne Halverson, working behind the scenes this one, and our guest, Dan Spindle from KSL TV. Thanks for listening, and we hope to have you back real soon for another episode of Fan Effect.